something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT,
we're walking on the sun with our 98 jams.
It's our 200th episode. We're doing it live in Halifax on December 10th.
And all the details on our brand new Canadianity Content Studios pilot, Canadian Classics. That's all coming up right now on TNT.
You ready?
Yeah.
You want to hear it?
Yeah.
1998 jam.
Oh, man. Okay, we're still talking about this jam 21 years later. So is it a good jam?
Space rock. Smash Mouth.
I don't know.
This is, like, people say they only have that all-star jam, but this was a pretty big hit, man.
It was a huge hit.
And just like it.
And I forgot about my never did it. So let me ask you something. Is that a banger because you can still remember it and it's still an earworm 20 years later? Why do they get such a bad rap? I know because they played for Trump.
They played for Trump? No, you're thinking of Three Doors Down. Smash Mouth didn't play for Trump, did they? I don't think so.
I don't know. I thought they did.
I think they're pretty woke. I thought they're pretty woke on
Are they woke
Twitter.
AFFM?
I think so.
Here's the thing.
This was from the song called, the album called Fush You, Mang.
Okay. They always say in music, if you can stand out on the radio as sounding different than everyone else, that's a good thing. I would argue that these guys do.
When he breaks up the beats.
It's like if the How Bizarre guy and the Midnight Oil guy had a baby.
It's Midnight Oil and who?
How Bizarre. Destination Unknown. Oh, the same sort of rhythm.
OMC and Peter Garrett.
So, Jeremy, is Smash Mouth a good band or not a good band?
Well, I'm sure they're good. I've had a couple friends play in that band as drummers.
And by all accounts, lovely fellows.
Randy and Jason. Yeah, Randy Cook's a bod. Yeah, for sure. They do a lot of... They're still out there, man. They play... They do lots of corporate gigs and stuff. They make money. They're out there walking on the sun getting paid.
See, I think... Like me, you're softening a little bit.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say they suck if they're out there working. Like, that's too easy in a way. Sure,
I know,
like,
but
it's kind of sappy or whatever. But you know what? It's kind of like 50s pop song. I don't really hate on that stuff. It's, to me, they were always like that. They were kitschy and kind of but they captured the vibe. So, I mean, I gotta respect that they're trying to go for like a 50s beach space jam, and they got it. Beach blanket space cadets.
You can actually picture cartoon characters dancing to that song.
There was a lot of songs that year that had like throwback jams. Like this one is the same. Remember this band, Fastball, The Way? That was a...
Oh, hit it. Let me hear it. I remember the name of the band.
Oh, they have the big, like, the intro.
Oh, everyone can see the way that you walk on this pavement.
Yeah. This is another, like, copping, like, 40s Greek groups. Bossa Nova.
I like this song.
Well, it's a good pop song. It's kind of got a Elvis Costello vibe, I thought. I played shows with these guys. They were good live.
Did you?
Three piece. Yeah.
Oh man, I thought they were gonna get to the chorus there.
Comes all of them out. Well, you're fired up.
I was like, yeah, I thought it was gonna happen. Okay, what is the optimal scenario to be listening to this song? What are you doing? Cleaning a garage? Fire this on? Comes on the radio. You don't change it.
I mean, it would be all right if I was like mini putting with the kids.
Yeah.
Right?
You're mini putting.
Here's the jam.
You go in to pick up your putter and this is playing and you're like, yeah.
Yeah, we're like, hey, I remember this song. I remember these guys. I remember they were all skinny legs masks.
Or it's Saturday morning, you're popping in a Canadian Tire to grab a couple screws and this is playing on the overhead. All right.
You know when you see guys and they're way skinnier than you thought they were? These guys were like that.
Are they? I don't know if I know that feeling.
Yeah, skinny. Skinny masks. Skinny little leg masks.
Skinny Masks is a great name for a band. The Skinny Masks.
How about, remember this jam? Madonna? Ray of Light? This was a big hit.
Was that 98?
What were you doing when you heard this song?
I must have been on the Jono Vision. I was probably in the elevator at CBC in Toronto. It was before the Ubers.
You heard it in the elevators? Like pop jams in the elevator there?
Yeah, sometimes. Like if it was on CBC Radio 2 or 3
it's
or
like
something.
It's like you get in and there's Suzuki's in there.
No, it's usually like down. Michael Enright is on the radio.
Okay. Well, who's in the elevator, though, I'm saying?
Maybe a Sukian Lee or two. Maybe a Bob McDonald from Quirks and Quarks. Maybe a couple of Adrian Clarksons before she was Governor General. Maybe some Ralph Ben Merges. Maybe an Air Force person or two.
Maybe me coming in for some Christmas thing or something.
Yeah. You're coming in to do Metro Mornings food drive. There.
I'm trying to remember what... Because I'm sure you asked us to come on John the Vision, and we probably said no.
Yeah, you're too cool.
Like, yeah, hey. Not my bad. Take it up with Rain.
I get it.
That's what Mike Bullard said it. I get it.
Did you guys play Bullard or you didn't?
No.
You didn't do that either?
But we our motto as a band was if the hip didn't do it, we're not doing it.
Oh, wow. The hip was on Jono Vision.
So if the hip?
Yeah.
The Tragically Hip was on Jono Vision?
Yeah.
Really?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
I was trying to see if in any universe
you'd be like, wait a second, like maybe like... Like, they were there because, like, their mom was on it or, like, some kid that was hanging out and they
no,
were
not
on
even.
It in that regard.
Not even.
They weren't playing.
Their whole thing was they didn't do, like, variety TV.
I know. So, like, if they did it, then that's why we didn't do anything, really, except much music.
There was the Ralph Ben Merges show. And a lot of bands did that show. Friday Night with Ralph Ben Merges.
Yeah.
And then there was a show called the 9 o'clock show that I remember Chantel doing. I remember watching Chantel on the 9 o'clock show on the monitor in my office because they had a feed like to the whole building that you could watch.
Yeah. Ben Merges definitely asked and the hip didn't do that. So we didn't do that either.
So that was your first question. Like, well, did the hip do it?
Yeah.
And if the answer was no, then your answer was no.
Because isn't that always easier, right? Like, first of all, you're not being... You're saying this is, the model. Did they do it? No. Okay. Sorry.
Did you see, like, after you did Conan, for example, did you see a spike in traction or sales or anything? Like, was there a direct correlation? Or was it just a cool thing to do?
For what?
To do, like, Conan.
No, you should, you'd see a spike, definitely. Like, especially in the early times, like, 5, 10 grand, 10,000 records.
Really?
Jay Leno, same thing. Oh, definitely.
You Big guys time. Did the Tonight
and
Show?
And it was kind of, yeah.
No way.
Yes.
Yeah. How have we never talked
Jay,
about that?
Jay coming in. How are you? How's it going, guys? Hey, how you doing? Super nice.
In his
that guy's really nice.
Denim shirt.
Yeah. Hey, how are you? Thanks for coming in here, guys. Hey, thanks.
He's got grease from a 1948 Model T Ford on his pants.
Yes. Yes. No, but he came in on this little tiny weird car.
And so he did. He did the dressing room pop-by?
Yeah. He always definite little pop-in.
Who else was on the bill with you guys?
I can't remember.
Like, was it Dolph Lundgren, Our Lady Peace, and Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop? Like, who was it?
No, it was, I can't, I have no idea. I don't remember. Probably someone from, like, CSI or something like that.
Right.
One of those
Mariska Hargitay.
Right. Coming over from the lot, having a dart, and then going in the show.
Oh,
right?
Man. So was that a cool experience, the Tonight Show?
Yeah, it was all right. It was pretty cool, I guess.
It must have been
at a time when
it was a big get.
It was during Gravity, and it was Somewhere Out There days. So it was like super. That song was banging all over the place. So it was just busy. So when I did the Tonight Show, I probably did like a show that night, or had to fly out and do something the next day. So it was you don't even watch it on TV because you got to get some. Well, probably not sleep or whatever. Just too busy to see it.
Was that your biggest song in the States?
That one, Clumsy, and Starseed. Superman did pretty well.
Crazy.
But between Starseed did really well. Sneaky Good, the first banger. It's a good jam.
So then, what do? You get a report every week where it is on the charts?
Oh, yeah, you see it. You're looking. Like, when you first, a band that has a hit, you become a radio, like, insider within, like, 2 months. Because you're looking at not only the big charts. Because if you're on the big charts, then you're on all the little charts. So you go, you know, you start looking at each radio station, and then you break up the radio stations from, like, rock stations to alternative stations, and which stations are you on? You look at the top tens of the stations that you're getting played on. Like, it's just the depth of it. You become just, like, an A&R guy. It's crazy.
Well, I remember you
and
saying
you can get addicted to it. It's like watching stocks, you know. You just get so... Well, why? What can we do to make this better? You know, you try and figure out ways, and it's just, especially if a song's really doing well, you just see everything seamless, how it collects and gets bigger and bigger, and the phones are ringing and all that stuff. It's just once that happens, and the next one happens, and then you start feeling that as a regular basis, you just keep looking, and then once it starts the other way, you stop looking, and then you don't care anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, man. It doesn't mean anything.
No. Well, because you just start like, oh, man, because you remember it was every single station, and then it's like 30%. I mean, depending on, like, a song being, you know, super successful, and then one, like, kind of when it's later. I'm talking about the last few years, where it's like you just kind of don't even bother looking.
I remember you saying at that time, too, that the distinction between alternative and rock was actually pretty important. And you guys had to kind of make a conscious decision which side you wanted to come down on. And you opted for alternative, right?
You cater to the genre in a sense.
So you couldn't straddle.
At that time, there was... Well, yeah, because there's alternative, which is like the White Stripes or, you know, rock, which is like, you know, Breaking Benjamin, you know, really hard guitar driven, you know, it's kind of metal, new metal, that vibe where it's different. It's not alternative. You know what I mean? Where that's when you had the different, well, it started like the Rage Against the Machine as like the alternative kind of heavy rock. And then that kind of turned into Limp Bizkit in a sense.
Whoa.
Which became like poppy kind of new metal, not the same weight in terms of the lyrics, with Nookie being replaced by, you know, talking about, you know, Che Guevara or politics in general. Remember the first time I saw Rage Against the Machine at Lollapalooza. They like were just standing on stage protesting the t-shirt sales being too expensive for like 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. Like they were woke, Greg, first and foremost band.
Well, that era was like, kind of woke too, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Because if you were alternative in that day, you had to kind of be woke big time, because they were gravitating away from like the hair metal of the late 80s and the early 90s, like the Poisons and stuff, like, and Motley Crue, where it was like glam metal and about partying and about girls and drugs. And then it, all of a sudden, grunge was about being upset and depressed and had nothing to do with that. So the culture of that followed that, those, the lyric and the idea of like, forget parties and the drugs and the sex, let's just think about, you know, ideas and feelings or whatever, you know, classic singer songwriter ideas, personal things.
Like Pearl Jam was
so
woke.
That kind of turned it all on its, yeah, it turned all everything on its ear in that regard. But then in the late 90s it started coming back to partying again, and that happened through a lot to do with rap too, like, because gangsta rap was very street and heavy about personal stuff, and it turned into hooks and partying. And now it's about partying, a lot of same concept, you know. So the Kid Rocks and the Limp Bizkits were right in there with that whole party thing. I think rap was all about that, the Cristal and the club and all that stuff. Like, the gateway was back open again.
It's funny to think of like Pearl Jam, Smash Mouth, and 50 Cent standing in the wings at the American Music Awards or something. Like, yeah.
Well, just the pendulum swinging, right? Even the, like going from like fancy leather pants and, you know, crazy clothes and all, everything custom fit, to flannel pants and almost looks like you're in pajamas.
Yeah.
Just the complete opposite, right? And that's ridiculous as well, right? But that's what happens. It's so funny. Now it's, who knows what's going on? It's a little bit of everything, because there is no control of like three or four different genres where radio stations and record companies, all you get to hear the same stuff. It's just a little more wide now. And in some senses it's not, like in radio and stuff, it's still top 40 is top 40. But even that itself, like top 40, 20 years ago, you'd hear all kinds of different styles of music. Now you hear just kind of everybody's merged to the drum machine, pop hook vocal, and it's just features. It's just some person with someone else, or some other major artist with another, like Taylor Swift with a rapper, or Post Malone with a singer. It's just kind of combined into one massive highway where definitely you don't see that many rock bands or guitar, bass, and drum stuff going on.
Well, I was thinking about that when you were saying there's a difference between rock and alternative.
Outside,
rock is kind of one category now, right? There aren't subcategories of rock at this particular moment, are there?
I don't even know what, I don't know what rock radio play. First of all, I don't know too many rock stations. There was lots of them 15 years ago, but I don't know what a rock station is even. I know there's still
Arkell's a rock band
type stations like they're a good example because they're a band that would probably get played on alternative and rock back in the day and pop too. Like they would probably get played on pop radio, which they do, but they would also get played on something like a 102.1 or an 88.1 in Toronto, which are more leaning to more towards kind of what the idea of alternative is, which is, I guess, what we call like the beard rock or the what is it like when you go down to the festivals, like the shaky knees or whatever.
Yeah.
The guys that are, they have the bass drums and the acoustics on stage. They're great, but with not the Lumineers, but the other ones.
Yeah, Mumford and Sons.
The Irish. Mumford and Sons, that stuff.
Right. What is that? Is that rock?
But I don't know. Like in my head, that's what they would call alternative back in the day. But I don't think it would be played on rock radio, no. I think nowadays there's... What's rock now? I would say like Slipknot, but I don't think Slipknot gets played on rock radio. I think it's too heavy. I don't even know. It's not my problem right now, to be honest.
No kidding.
When you think about it. Imagine.
If it was your problem?
What about this jam? Remember we played the other one last week. We're going to get this one this week. Paula Cole?
Yes. Wasn't this Dawson's Creek?
Is this the Dawson's Creek jam?
Yeah.
Yeah. 5-syllable words on every line. Can you do the Dawson's Creek talking?
What do you mean? I didn't really watch the show.
Is that Dawson talking? The Dawson talking. Dawson's Creek talking. It's like, you're just thinking about the biology of the human consumption.
Is that what that show was? Is that how it was written?
Yeah, everybody always was talking like they were just reading a thesis or something.
Smart teenagers on TV, like, for the first time ever.
So put the big words, y'all. Did you watch that show?
No.
I remember a girlfriend was watching that show. I'm like, why is everybody talking like they're freaking just came out of a freaking dental office?
It's an easy trap to fall into if you're writing one character who's really smart and suddenly everyone on the show speaks with that same patois. It's real easy to do. Especially if you like it. You just want to keep doing it and give it to everybody.
Yeah. It's just too... Oh, remember this Ben Folds 5 band?
Sure.
Remember, they were great. The Brick Jam.
Is that... She's a brick and I'm drowning slowly.
The Brick Jam.
It was a good jam. Subject matter is heavy. But that's a great chorus, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's one of those ones where you're like, I don't want to hear about what this is about.
Yeah, it's kind of a drag.
What about this one?
Jeremy Tiger.
Adia? Remember Adia?
Here's a... Is that Sarah McLachlan?
Yeah.
That's, my second cousin, Luke Doucette.
Oh, yeah, I know Luke.
With Sarah, and he's in the band White Horse.
Oh, listen to this jam.
There's some Canadianity right there. I think the problem becomes when people try to adapt their sound with the changing tides, right?
Yeah, that's when things get a little squirrely. Like when...
Yeah, it's better to just be the Rolling Stones and stay the Rolling Stones than try to have a disco face.
Not a good move to go Chris Gaines. Remember Chris Gaines? the Garth Brooks alter ego pop guy.
I forget that. And
didn't he have like hair?
Chris
Gaines. He had more hair?
Yeah, he had bangs. Garth Brooks, man. Bangs.
I see. Someone. I think like the kids are calling.
Who's calling you, Taggart?
We have to figure out what's going on. Let's take a break and we'll get right back into things.
Sounds good. With big news.
Fucking right, eh?
So the 200th episode's coming up.
It is coming up, and it is coming up live.
We were finally able to announce it. Took a while to pull together a bunch of moving parts. Not unlike a lot of things with this podcast, because we're in different provinces most of the time, or different countries some of the time. I'm in Boston right now.
Mm-hmm.
Figuring out where to do it, figuring out the right partner, the right place, a Canadianity-style venue, trying to make the most of a trip for one of us to a different city. So here's how it's all going to shake down. On Monday, we're shooting a video.
Mayflower, baby.
Shooting a video for Gordon Lightfoot track. That's the first single for the record that comes out January 17th. We can say that, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Definitely.
And then Tuesday, we're going to shoot our, I don't know if we're going to shoot it. We're going to record it. We're going to record our 200th episode of the Mayflower
Audio, for sure.
And then what we are going to shoot is a music video for an Andrea jam at the Mayflower Curling Club as part of our 200th episode. So if you do live in Halifax or surrounding areas, you do want to come to the show, you'll get to be in our music video for the Andrea tune, which is called Weekend Bumsies. That comes out in February.
It's going to be a good time.
It's going to be a real good time.
I love the fact that it's at the Mayflower Curling Club.
Pretty Canadianity. And incidentally, also a side door venue.
It's got a great vibe. A side door venue. Laura Simpson's, hopefully she's going to be there. I think she's coming.
Oh, wicked.
It'll be nice to finally, because I haven't met her yet face to face. We've talked so much, so that'll be great.
Wow.
I'm psyched to be doing a side door show. Like, this is great. It's all coming together, bud.
I know it is. It's a really good fit for us to do a side door show, and a good reminder that we've talked about side door on the show before, but it pairs artists with venues to put on unique and memorable shows, and it's not entirely living room concerts. It's any kind of space that can hold, I think it's more than 20 people. That's what you need to be a venue. So when we were looking for something, especially Canadianity, and the Mayflower Curling Rink popped up, we were like, we were working with Matt from Side Door. And we were like, that would be awesome. He's like, cool, what's your second choice? And we didn't actually have one.
Yeah,
because that's how sure we were. We wanted to be the Mayflower.
Can't wait.
It's going to be 200 hours of traveling on.
Yeah, right? All this talk, and what do we have to show for it?
Well, we have a lot when you think about it. Not to wash our own birds, but we have
200.
A Canadian Comedy Award. We have a book. We have a record coming out. A lot's come of it.
I know. It's great. Lots of shows and lots more shows.
Maybe most notably, what we have out of it is this network of buds who believe in Canadianity and bring it to their own lives and spread the word. And I still get emails, as I know you do, from people who are like, hey, just so you know, I took the word bud into my workplace, so we all call each other buds now. Or, listen to your podcast, got me through a really hard time. Love getting emails from people, not that they're going through hard times, but love that it helps and resonates in some way. And in perfect Canadianity fashion, you were kind enough to agree that the proceeds from our 200th show are going to go to Northwood, which is a wonderful facility in Halifax where my mom lived at the end of her life. And they say Northwood is a place people go to live, not a place where people go to die. And that says everything about the spirit that they bring to their work. And it's not uncommon at Northwood for the elevator door to open and see a staff member waltzing to music heard only in the head of the person that they're dancing with. And it just feels really good to be able to do that. So thank you.
No, it's cool to also that the amount of work that those people do and that keep that the spirit, as you say, just like that friendliness and that forgivingness and the empathy that they have at those places are incredible. So I'm happy to do that.
Awesome. And as is well documented, like
That is the biggest, fastest growing percentage of our population, right? Boomers are getting older. They're younger and fitter than ever before. So that type of work is critical and going to only be more important as the years go on. It feels like a good fit. Feels like a good fit because I know one of the things they're doing at Northwood is raising money for blankets, getting blankets donated because it's an older facility and, you know, if your blood's not circulating the way it used to, it's nice to have a cozy blanket on your lap. So they also put on nice social things in their room there. They bring in musicians to play music for people. Interesting that Alzheimer's, for example, doesn't affect the part of the brain where music lives. So it's not uncommon for people to forget words but remember lyrics to songs that they've known their whole lives. So it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. No, and my mom, same, like, likes to... She's been, like, hanging out. She has a friend that's got, like, a pretty wicked big screen TV in their room, too.
Awesome.
So she hangs out over there, and they crush... what is it, the CHCH in the mornings?
Yeah.
And all the good oldies.
Oh, that's what they're into watching?
It's always, like, it goes from, like, 6 in the morning or whatever till 12 of, like, all those great shows from, like, Laverne and Shirley to All in the Family and all those shows. It's the hang.
That's great.
Where's my mom? Well, she's over there.
It's great. My mom, when she was at Northwood, had a roommate named Dorothy, and they just bonded and became real good buddies. And you realize, you know, a lot of seniors, as they get older, they tend to live alone and might not get that kind of social buzz or fix that they need. So places like that can provide that for them.
That's awesome.
So we're going to shoot the video for the Andrea song.
Yeah, that'll be a good time.
Really good time. Great night.
Looking forward to the Monday, Tuesday rip and Hallie.
Yeah, it's fun and exciting to think that what seemed so far away at one point is now finally, like, almost here. The album's been in the can for a while, but now it's like, wow, it's not that long till we'll get to share it with you guys. January 17th is 6 weeks away. Crazy.
For the first single, yeah. Yes. It's pretty exciting. I'm just looking, how's the weather out there? It's pretty cold here. We got a dumped on snow here in Toronto. But how's, like, Monday, Tuesday looking in Halle next week?
I actually don't even know.
How are we going to be?
As I mentioned, I'm in Boston. I'm working here this week, and the girls came for the weekend. We went to the aquarium, went to the Boston Public Library. The hotel that we were staying in had this kind of lounge with a fireplace and some board games and some snackies. So we logged some time in there. I haven't actually spent much time here just hanging. It's a great city.
It is. Did you do a little Newbury street rip?
Yeah, we're staying a couple of streets over from Newbury. Henry came. It was a full fam party
for a great city.
48 hours straight. What's your move in Boston?
Like you do, just cruise around, like, because it's not that big, and it's kind of easy to get from one amazing place to another, whether it be by the water or if you want to rip by the harbor.
Some harbor ripping?
I like a little Newbury Street rip. I like to go over to where Berkeley is and cruise around there.
See a bunch of masks carrying tubas and flutes and stuff?
By the Paradise, that club there. There's some really great neighborhoods. It's just a solid walk, especially this time of year because they get the lights up and stuff.
Oh, yeah, she's all going for Christmas.
It's all fancy.
We went to Quincy Market and sat on the floor upstairs and pounded some chicken sandwiches and just hung. And not unlike... we've said before about camping, when you're just away and there's nothing to do but hang. Sometimes when you're home, even if you're all together, you're like, I should probably sort the shed. But when you're away, there's nothing to do but hang. So we had a great time.
Just chilling.
There you go.
Where'd you guys stay? Where was it? Did you do a two banger? Did not an Airbnb banger though.
Okay, hotel so banger. All right, so this is the weird thing. Here's the weird thing.
What?
Booked a room, right? And then Carol was simply looking up whether that hotel has a pool, and what came back on the Google search was no, but it has bed bugs. And she was like, oh, sorry, I was just checking to see if it has a pool. And the internet was like, it doesn't have that, but if you're looking for bed bugs, it does have those. And there were incidents as recently as October. So I was like, well, we can't stay there then, because you know, like when you hear like some kid at school has lice and suddenly you're itchy all over your body. It's the same thing. If it's in your mind and you think there are bed bugs in this hotel, you're going to have the bolty uprighties. So I moved to a different hotel and then asked the booking website, which was a third party, hey, you know how I'm not technically able to cancel because it's within the window? I feel like this counts as special circumstances. Can you just call them and tell them I won't be holding up my end of the bargain, because I feel like bed bugs is not upholding your end of the bargain. So why don't we just call it off? And the hotels.com people called the hotel and they were like, no, too bad. Can't cancel. It's within the window. So like anything.
But it's bed bugs. Yeah.
It's not every room.
Go to people's court.
But it is recent. Well, that's the thing. You know what people's court is? Social media. But you don't want to be Mr. Snapchat who's like, oh, look at this. Here's the hotel. And they didn't blah, blah, blah. But it is tempting sometimes because that is one of the only outlets you have as a consumer. Because presumably, I think it was $250 Canadian that I'm out. But presumably it'd be worth $250 Canadian for them to pay against word getting out there. I could say the name of the hotel right now. And maybe there are buds listening who are planning a trip to go and stay at that particular hotel and they'd be out that business. But you know what? I'm not going
to
do
it. All you have
to
do is look up. But you said you just have to look up, what was it, bed bugs galore site, whatever, which one's on there. And they're like number one or whatever.
Well, it's
on
not
the list
galore.
Bed bugs.
No, what is that? But there was like, once you start reading, there's the Massachusetts bed bug registry.
There it is. Boom.
This hotel's listed on it. But here's the truth. If word got out that all you had to do to get out of a third-party contract was say, by the way, heard you guys have the BBs, then a hotel would never make any money, because everyone would just, when they canceled, just throw that out there willy-nilly. Fortunately,
but that's why, the registry is verified, though, right? Like, it's solid, that registry.
Oh, yeah, there's a report, and here's the room it was. It was in this room. Here's what the hotel did. They moved us to another room. They brought in dogs or whatever. They did detect traces of it. Like, it's legit.
Like, oh, man.
I know.
Forget it.
The itchy scratchies.
I'm going to keep that in bedbugs.org.
It's the Massachusetts Bed Bug Registry, the BBR. The Better Bugsness Bureau. I wouldn't want to work there, but I appreciate the work that they're
Betty
doing.
Betty, you bet bugs.
Yeah. The Betty White Foundation. Have you ever had the itchy scratchies when you've been, I mean, how many rooms have you stayed in? 5,000? More.
Yes.
More.
Too many to count to remember. I don't know. But I've had a few, like, you know, woke up the next day with a bite on my back or leg once in a while, but no, like, feeling something's on me. Continual, like, and then seeing bed bugs. Like, I haven't never had that.
You've never left with a bracelet of red marks around your ankles or wrist?
No.
No.
That's not just a little bite, maybe like a spider or something. But I don't know. Do they just leave that like a circle?
I don't know. It's the kind of thing that I don't want to know too much about. I don't think so. I don't think so. But I do the peel off the comforter and look under the thing and look in the seam of the mattress. And that's already pretty gross work. But I feel like it's prudent.
And wash the remote.
Yeah, dip the remote in Purell.
Remember that good?
We have a friend who was saying that sometimes you can smell the spray when you walk in the room. If you smell the spray, that's an indication that it was either preventative or maybe they had to spray because there was an incident. But, you know, in a way, when you start to think of that stuff.
That's almost worse, because that's like a, you know, then you're breathing that in.
I know.
And there's bed bugs, maybe, or.
I know.
That's not cool.
I know, but if you start thinking about that stuff, in a way, like, you'd never leave the house.
You get all just full on Howie Mandel and, like, gloves everywhere.
Well, someone was saying that there's a problem with lice on planes. Because when you think about it, people sleep on them.
Oh,
and
the headrest?
Yeah. Remember they used to put those, like, paper towels? Those Velcro
paper towels
for head grease? They cut them back, man. They don't do that anymore. They don't even do that anymore.
That's right. There was always a fresh thing there.
Yeah, they made paper towel for your head grease.
They make you forget. They're like, no, we don't. We never had that. Like, just making it up.
Now they just have
the Velcro.
There's
lots of stuff.
Piece of Velcro that the thing used to stick.
Have you ever seen pictures of food on planes in the 70s or like 60s?
Oh, yeah. It was like, would you like more coq au vin? Sure.
Yeah.
More
it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I'd take
there
a
was
splash.
Everything. It was all first class, the whole thing. And it was just crushing China, like China plates. Everything was like perfect.
I would be curious to know what. Have you flown Air Canada Rouge?
Sure.
It's like I don't know. I don't even know if it's a discount affiliate or they're more budget-friendly planes or whatever. I don't think. I mean, you book an Air Canada flight, and sometimes it's Rouge, and sometimes it's not. But the Rouge routes used to be like Toronto, Vegas, Toronto, LA, like kind of long hauls where the Rouge flights.
Yeah.
And a flight attendant from Air Canada explained to me the reason they started Rouge is because they can hire flight attendants who are more junior and pay them less because they're not in the union, because it's not Air Canada, it's Air Canada Rouge. But one of the things that makes it kind of discount, and I'm not dissing Air Canada because every airline is tangling with this stuff, but I think there's less room between you and the seat ahead of you, like all those tricks to get more people on for less money. But I've noticed that Rouge seems to be like the Toronto Halifax rip now, the shorter one. So I wonder if people complain and they don't use them for the longer ones anymore. Because I got on when I was going to Toronto last week, there was no first class cabin. And I never fly first class anyway. But there was no front of the bus. It was all like charter styles and it was a Rouge flight.
Yeah. I went from caring about flights to going in there just expecting to be like cattle prodded to the back and thrown like a bag of peanuts.
Yeah.
Halfway through.
If you're lucky, Jeremy.
That's all I expect.
At least Southwest, you get to pick your own flight, your own seat. You just board and grab a seat where there is one.
And there's always like the stand-up comic guy bringing everyone on.
Plane jokes.
The one-liners when they work there. Yeah. Plain joke guy.
Let's get this Boeing going. Let's get this Boeing going.
Hey, guys.
What was... Oh, someone was saying the other day we should do an East Coast drive-through thing. Because I was commenting that the East Coast is the only place in the world that takes 5 minutes to wrap up a conversation in the drive-through.
Oh, so you're like ordering there?
Yeah, and the person's like, what's going on? Not much. What's going on with you? Not a whole lot. Doing good. Almost done. We're finna work till 6. Then I'm off for 2 days. Trina's got the kids, so I might go camping.
No, then you're like, next thing you know, you're running out of gas sitting there.
Yeah, and the funny thing is...
People honking at you behind.
And it ends with, all right, well, I'll see you in a second, because you still have to drive up to the window. Like, what was the point of having the whole conversation through the headset?
Oh,
if you're just going to see them at the window anyway.
Oh, yeah. Because you know them that well.
Here's what we're going to do, bud. Let's take a break.
We could, yeah.
And then when we come back, you're going to tell the people about your exciting new project.
Oh, okay, sure.
Because it is exciting, and it is new, and it is a project, and I think the people would want to know.
I believe so, and it's a, a good time was had, and let's talk about it then.
Let's talk about it then. BRB.
Let me ask you this right quick, you know what I mean?
So with Canadianity Content Studios, one of the things that we're doing is we're making a few little pilots of shows that we're excited about. So you got to make yours this past week. Tell the people about it.
CCS Pilots. We finally got it together. It's called Canadian Classics, and it's a show where I play great Canadian jams with great Canadian musicians, or just great musicians that I know. They don't have to be Canadian, but the songs do. But we had a gas. We did Fly at Night by Chilliwack, which was a classic jam.
Such a banger.
With Ed Robertson. Ed Robertson on vocals. Our bud Ryan Gullen from the Sheepdogs on bass, who's a regular listen as well as Ed is. Tara Lightfoot and Robin Hatch, who played with me in OLP. And Tara Lightfoot is fantastic singer-songwriter that crushes it on guitar as well. So that was that first jam went by seamlessly. It was a great time. And then we decided to do the next jam, which was Lost Together by Blue Rodeo. And we had Colin and John Angus from The Trues, and Tara and Robin Hatch also joined us for that. And Alex St. Kitts, who's another bud friend of mine, great bass player. Remember when I was playing with Alex St. Kitts and Kurt Godwin in the few years back, just after I left OLP
That
other kind of band that was working with? So Alex, I've known him forever. He's amazing. And it was just incredible, man. It was just so much fun playing those two songs with those musicians, and they all like just melded perfectly and got together perfectly and made it fun and fast, and I can't wait to do more. I really think people are gonna like this thing. Hey, Jono, we had a great time.
There are so many reasons why this is a great show. It's first of all music education, because a lot of people from this generation, I mean, there's a clip right now of Billie Eilish was on Jimmy Fallon and she doesn't know who Van Halen is. And people are like, what? She doesn't know who Van Halen is. What? How old is she? 17? How would she know who Van Halen is? But there are all these great songs in our collective vault that people don't know, first of all. And secondly, as a fly on the wall, just to see five musicians who maybe sort of have a vague awareness of each other but have never played together before, get together in a room and work it out when everyone's that good a player to begin with, it was really cool to watch how, like, really after a couple rips through it, especially Lost Together is more maybe traditional in terms of tempo and stuff, but Fly at Night has a bunch of changes and it's not the most traditional song that's ever been laid out. A couple guitar solos, some time shifts, but man, everyone just came to play.
Yeah, no, it was really, couldn't have gone any better, to be honest. I went in hoping that it would go like that. I remember saying, like, well, maybe if it goes perfectly and everything goes smooth, we'll just have to run it like three or four times to get used to it and then a couple more to get it. So that's really what it ended up being. And that just kind of solidifies the idea that it can happen and that we can do it like that. And I mean, it's like you said, it's a project, but like to kind of see it from calling up folks and seeing if they're interested to what we had, where everybody's just so happy to come and happy to possibly do more. That's what I wanted. And same with, you know, being able to work with you guys, obviously Jonathan and Sylvia. Jonathan was directing and Sylvia was helping out everything else around it. And obviously there's a lot of stuff that's going on with this in terms of the sponsoring and all the other stuff that and marketing that Sylvia brings to the table. So it's just great to have music kind of become the project with our company. So it's been a
really
joy.
Yeah, really felt like playing to everyone's strength, and it was, I have to say, as a friend and fan, it was just so cool to watch you shred those songs, because they're both kind of fun drum songs, right? And secondly, yeah, to see
definitely.
The other musicians that you assembled look at you and hold you in reverence for the great drummer you are. Like, it was nice to see you on your throne, literally and figuratively. And it was a very moving experience. Colin from the Trues has just one of those voices that's, I don't know, whiskey soaked or been bat around enough to have some heartbreak in it. Like, what a great rock voice. And to watch,
yeah, and actually his voice with Tara, like their melodies together, it's a really interesting, sounds awesome too.
Well, Lost Together as a duet was phenomenal, and I was gonna get to Tara for sure, because for me she was one of the huge discoveries of the day. But I was gonna say, watching Ed work up to how high the Chilliwack song is, and just when you thought he was at the top of his range in falsetto, he'd kick into like, no, actually, here's my full voice, two notes higher than that.
Yeah,
like, I know, phenomenal, and phenomenal acoustic guitar player too. Tara, I guess I learned a lot through watching her, because I was wondering beforehand if, both vocally and musically, when you're approaching a cover, do you try to make it sound like the original, or do you do your own take on it? And I guess if Tara's solos in Fly at Night are any indication, it's kind of both. It's kind of your take on what the original guitar solo was, and she recreated it note for note, but it certainly felt like it was very much in her spirit. And what a great singer, great guitar player. And Robin too, like, really, it's whirly, right? And Lost Together, that's the sound.
In Fly at Night, it's a whirly, it's a B3.
B3 in Lost Together. Yeah. Every time Robin kind of creeped in with the B3, she has such a, I don't know the right terminology, but such a nice touch, and she plays with such elegance that you realize, it does take, it is the sum of its parts, and all of the parts, Ryan and Alex too. I mean, Alex is a great example on Lost Together. It doesn't have a very busy bass line, but at the end he was going off, and it was so tasteful and cool and him. Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really,
that's
really
what I
cool.
wanted. Yeah, same, you know, it just, everybody has their thing, and they did it perfectly. And actually, I got to hang out with Ed the next day. I went to his place and we had some lunch. We went to Adams and Barbecue, which is insane if you ever get a chance to go there. But I got to see his pinball machines. He's got like 15 pinball machines at his place,
which, and he cut down, right? Didn't he have way more at one point?
He might have 20, but I think he's got some, at least something like that. But the cool thing is he knows how to fix them, so it makes sense that to have them if you know all the meticulous stuff that goes on with cleaning them and the little tiny intricate workings and the wirings of the pinball machine, and knowing him, and he knows them all from like decades from the first era to now, and he loves the modern ones too. So it was a great education in the history, and a kind of bringing me up to speed on pinball.
He probably doesn't own them. He's probably running a Kijiji business where he fixes pinball machines, and people are just dropping them off,
just flipping them. He'll like look them up online, and then he'll look at the tour schedule and like find a place and go and pick it up. And it's pretty amazing the stuff that he has. But just going back to the playing, it's just, I knew he was always a great musician from Bare Naked Ladies. Like, they're always such a tight band. But Fly at Night is, it's so fast, and the acoustic and the drums have to be together. And that was like a concern that I had, that, you know, you never know when you're playing that if we're going to be playing in time together. But as soon as we started, it was like never even a concern. Didn't even have to think. And that's really hard to do, to play acoustic like that and sing at the same time and just not even but the acoustic having its own feel and rhythm as opposed to just kind of playing in time, you know,
big
or
time.
Even like trying to play in time. Same thing with Colin, like the strumming and in Lost Together. It's just there's a vibe with that, and that's so hard to get and to duplicate. And it was just great to see with Ed, because he just re-ripped it so quickly, you know.
Also,
he's a really, really great guitar player.
Colin,
and a drummer, too. Like, people don't know that Ed's also plays drums pretty well. So I think that helps. He's got some good rhythm.
Colin's phrasing on Lost Together, too, was different. I think, obviously, the voice and the way people sing is maybe the thing that people are most familiar with when it comes to doing a cover.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually just interpreted the song in a different way. And it wasn't, wasn't better or worse than the original. It was just different. And having it as a duet was beautiful. Because they were lost.
Yeah, I think together. I think that was kind of the happy amalgamation of what all those things. Because Colin, I'm sure he could sing it exactly like that, but the way that Greg Keeler did, but he sang it his way just to make it feel easy and comfortable, and that's it. That's, you know, you kind of, and same with the drums. Like, I didn't try to play all the fills that Glenn Milchen played. I just tried to play the feel and the vibe and then play my way as well. So that both songs have that element of the spirit and the groove is the same, yet it kind of also has a space to be your own personality in there, which kind of makes the songs more fun for us.
Yes.
Because you're not just,
and
you know,
Jangus
band styles.
John Angus was playing the string parts on his electric guitar too, right? So gave it sort of a familiar sound,
yeah.
But also made it new too. He's a great musician as well.
Yeah, John Angus tied all those string parts together on the second guitar part that made, yeah, just like, that's why I'm so proud of it too. That stuff that everybody rocked it for sure. I'm getting another call again here. Hang on a second. Don't
what
worry.
The...
You can keep talking. Hang on.
While we're talking, I would just like to say there's a possibility that Ryan Gullin from the Sheepdogs is the coolest looking mask I've ever seen in my life.
I'm doing my podcast.
So I'm going to try to talk for the first time in 200 episodes by myself and keep it going.
Hello.
Ryan Gullin is a Shaggy from Scooby-Doo nice. Looking mask. I just kept it going. I was talking about Ryan Gullin and how he's the coolest looking mask
I've
ever
that.
Seen.
That was great. I come back, I went to the other one. It was just Lisa. Just told her I was on the phone, and then I came back and I heard Scooby-Doo looking mask.
He is a Scooby-Doo looking mask. He's a Shaggy from Scooby-Doo looking mask. Like, wears all that 70s
nice
stuff,
guy.
But like unironically and means it, and it swings hard on him, and he's just cool.
Yeah.
Heavy player.
Yeah. He, and he's neighbors with my kid's godfather, Tony.
There you go.
Which is even more classic. But yeah, he's the best. I love everybody was so great, and we all, if we didn't know each other, we're friends now. You know, that's the other thing that's great about it.
This is the thing about Canadian classics. It could be a network TV show. It could be a web series. It could be any song from our history and any combination of artists from now, right? Those are two pretty kind of straight ahead, get our feet wet covers that a lot of people know. But we didn't even delve into mixing genres or getting someone who plays a different genre to reinterpret a song that was in a genre they're not super known for, you know?
Yeah.
I hope it's the kind of thing that musicians are lining up to say, hey, can I do Boys in the Bright White Sports Car? Can I do Helen by Rock Lazine? Okay, those are just my picks.
Helen.
Helen things you do.
How would you do?
Remember?
Who would do Helen? I know Helen. I'm just saying, if I were to do Helen in the show, I would have good for Helen, sing it.
Royal Wood.
Like Dallas Green. Dallas Green to sing Helen.
One of them maps, yep.
Hey? It would be great.
And just lend it all this weight that it never had. Well, our bud Rose Cousins.
All of a sudden, yeah. That's
Rose Cousins did Never Surrender. Was that the Corey Hart jam? One of those Corey Hart jams. And it just gave it a whole different feel.
Yeah. Because when you say it like Corey Hart, and then all of a sudden you say it different. Like with some, like you said, the weight.
Yeah, gave it gravitas. This is the thing of which I am most proud. The projects that we're doing with Canadianity Content Studios, we are starting with an idea that we love, with people that we love, and making something that we love for the right reasons,
mm-hmm.
and worrying about where it's going to land, who's going to pay for it, what it's going to be later. So the thing that that does is two things. One, it makes going to work fun and inspiring and exciting. And two, it kind of creates a mechanism whereby if we do sell it to someone based on something we can show them, then later if they want to change it, we can say, well, look, this is the thing that you bought. This was the thing that we made and you wanted to buy that. So let us make this thing. Because too many cooks, man.
No, it's always
seen it a million times.
It's always better. Yeah, no, it's better when you show the product as what you're talking about, the vision. Because if you start diluting what it is, it just starts to become watered down every single time.
Yeah, and especially, you know, we're making things that feel good and make the world a better place and are happy and. Like, that's a great jumping-off point. We're not making it because someone gave us a bunch of money and asked us to make a thing. So even if it doesn't sell, we'll be so proud to have made this, and everybody had a good time, and everybody got paid, and it was an awesome, memorable, fun day. But I really think it could live any number of places.
I think it's something that could go on and have a nice little run.
Must have felt pretty good to play those tunes, did it, bud?
It did, yeah.
Your fills and Fly at Night are insane.
Good times.
Did you have to practice a little bit honestly, to get up to like show speed?
I just had to play those songs. You know, there's playing. I could have just not listened to them and it wouldn't have been as much vibe. I was trying to, because I kind of got into both bands a little bit just to feel, get the vibes. Yeah. So I was listening to a lot of different Chilliwack and a lot of different Blue Rodeo. And it makes it more fun because music's supposed to kind of make you feel something. And especially if you get more of a feel, because to be honest, I wasn't like a huge, I didn't know tons about Chilliwack like growing up. So when you look back at their albums and how many great songs they actually wrote, it's not just, I mean, Gone, 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 My Girl, that's like their last song pretty much almost, you know, there's so many great songs in the 70s that are nothing like that song. Not that that's not a good song, but it's nothing like Fly at Night, and it's nothing like Reno or Crazy Talk. Just those are all completely different kind of guitar rock songs, you know?
So I feel like
good stuff.
They're just a little before our time, right? They're late 70s.
Early 70s into late 70s.
Is it that
70s.
Far back? Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fly at Night, the lyrics are awesome, though.
Yeah, it is.
Four men in a rock and roll band, you know?
And that's it. But what a good time it was to be jamming with all those buds.
Yeah, I can't wait for you buds to see it. And if you haven't gotten your tickets yet for Tuesday, December 10th at the Mayflower Curling Club in Halifax, come because it's going to be a time.
Yeah, and I guess we'll see everybody there. We'll think up a few surprises, right, Bud?
Well, all I can say is the Buds from Covered Bridge Chips, maybe or maybe not, sent me 12 bags of chippies to share.
That's enough right there.
Maybe I'll be taking my 12 bags of chippies to share.
Maybe we can get even more from them, the fact that we mentioned it on this.
I know, but then it feels dirty. Then it feels dirty. It was so nice when it was just, hey, we want to send you some chippies. Now it's a thing.
I know, but there's going to be more than 12 people there.
I know, but they're big bags. We can do a pass around.
They might. I know, those Buds are cool, though. They might appreciate the extra action. We'll see.
Never know.
They're good Buds.
Good chat and Bod.
Good chat, Bod. Talk to you soon, Bod.